following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News and is brought to you by Pottawatomie Hotel and Casino. And now, here are your hosts, Jim Ozarski and Tom Silverstein.
Good afternoon, everyone. Tom Silverstein and I are back from the Packers 2020 NFL virtual draft. I, of course, am Jim Ozarski. We are with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, JS Online, PackersNews.com. And Tom, let's just get right into it. You had like 36 hours straight on the live blog, millions of people worldwide just pounding you. So we will give you a chance to talk back. But let's hit the particulars real quick. We know, of course, Jordan Love traded up in the first round. We'll run through the picks right here. Second round, A.J. Dillon, running back. Third round, Josiah DeGuara, tight end slash H-back. No pick in the fourth round. Fifth round, linebacker Kamal Martin. Sixth round, guard John Runyon. Sixth round, center Jake Hansen. Sixth round, guard Simon Stepaniak. Seventh round, safety Vernon Scott. Seventh round, edge rusher Jonathan Garvin. And you will notice I did not mention a wide receiver. The 35 wide receivers, according to the NFL's official draft list, were selected. Not a single one by the Green Bay Packers when Brian Gutekunst seemed pretty confident he would get one in the months leading up to the draft, Tom. So let's start there. Was it as simple as the trade up for Jordan Love, which meant losing that fourth rounder, really just toppled that plan? Because he seemed pretty certain that once they got to A.J. Dillon and Josiah DeGuara, there wasn't a receiver he felt could contribute in 2020.
Yeah, so I think I wanted to know, and I asked him this on Saturday night after the draft was over, which is, you know, he has used the strengths of drafts to his advantage. In 2018, it was a great cornerback draft, and he drafted Jaire Alexander and Josh Jackson. Last year was a great edge rusher draft, and he took Rashawn Gary. This year is a great receiver draft, and he took no one. And basically what he said was that he thought it was really good at the top, but it wasn't as good as he didn't see it the same way other people did, that there were a ton of receivers after the second round. He didn't really give a round, but he just said that at the top it was good, and then, you know, he wasn't that blown away with it. So I think it's possible they might have taken a receiver in the first round if Jordan Love hadn't fallen. I think they wanted to see whether New England was going to take him or, you know, some surprise team moved up and tried to take him. I think they feel like Indianapolis was going to take him, so they move into the first round and take him. So they traded up. But, yeah, they pulled no wide receivers out of this. And where this will show is not this year. I mean, most receivers are not going to have an impact this year. Where this will show is 2 years down the road, 3 years. If they don't have any more wide receivers to go with Devontae Adams, you know, then you'll be asking, well, did you make a big mistake not taking advantage of this class?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Tom, because, you know, I think it's, at least to me, some of the outrage, it's not just that it was a receiver, it's also in the context of taking a high carry, big running back in the second round, a tight end slash H-back in the third round, and I don't know what you put on in terms of mock grades and all that stuff, but I think for fans at least, that was the issue. Not so much because, like, fourth round, fifth round, there were only a couple receivers taken. The big run then came late in the sixth and seventh. It was really more that group, but I don't, after trading the fourth rounder, Tom, he couldn't move up. We talked about this on our round one wrap up on Jordan Love, that there was no capital for him to move. And he even said it would have required 2021 draft picks. And that was something he wasn't willing to do.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And, you know, what happened by giving away that fourth is they got caught in a bad position. And this, I think, was a mistake that they will never admit. But they really liked Josiah DeGuara. But, I mean, I talked to several scouts after that was over, and they all had him ranked as a later round pick, not, you know, a fifth, not a, a third round pick. But he was looking at being at the end of the third round, having no fourth round pick, and then having to wait till the end of the fifth with really no way to move up very much before he would be able to take DeGuara. And I think they just decided, whatever, we're going to overdraft him. We like him so much that, you know, if we're right on him, it'll be a third, just like a third round pick. So, you know, giving that fourth kind of put them in a bad position, and he never found a way to get back into the fourth. So, you know, that'll be, that's going to be a big pick for him, you know, over the course of the year. Of course, Jordan Love is the biggest pick he's ever made, but this guy will be important for us to judge this draft.
Yeah, so I guess just before we get into the draft as a whole here, Tom, one last thing on receivers. So, of course, when this ends, he has to talk about how pleased he is with the current draft, or the current team, the current roster, which I think is interesting because in the our last meeting with him at the before the combine, he was asked specifically, you know, did Alan Lazard separate himself from this group? And he flat out said, I don't know if he separated himself. they were clearly unhappy with Marquez Valdez-Scantling at the end of last year, one snap in the NFC title game. I don't think the quarterback was thrilled with him. I don't think the coaches were. You know, they started mentioning undrafted guys as part of their group. I mean, at this point, Tom, the roster's almost at 90. They did, as we record this, we're still tracking down the final undrafted free agents. I mean, it's Reggie Begelton from Canada and Devin Funchess, right? I mean, that's it. Or they, because how do you go from saying Alan Lazard hasn't separated himself at all, and then because you didn't draft a guy, now he's someone we really like?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's post-draft speak.
Right.
You know, really what, the way I see it is that unless they took a guy in the first round, they weren't going to get anybody who was going to help them immensely. It wasn't going to be the difference in them winning a Super Bowl this year. It just doesn't happen. It's very rare. I mean, even the top first round guys, you know, except for, you know, Julio Jones or someone like that. I mean, Amari Cooper had a terrible rookie year. There, you could go down the list. And I think that for this year, they're okay. I think with this group, they'll be okay. And where I see it being a problem is the year after that and the year after that, when they really should be developing another Davante Adams somewhere in there. And they don't have another Davante Adams on the roster or even a potential one. So I don't think that this year is that big a problem. I also, you've written about this too, that in Matt LaFleur's offense, wide receivers, they don't feel like they have to have, you know, Pro Bowl receivers to win, because their passing game is so built off of the play action that they'd rather have guys who can block, because, you know, their run game is so important to them.
Yeah, that's it's interesting. Obviously, Packers fans are screaming and shouting once we get to we're not going to have any markers of camps and OTAs, Tom, so maybe down the line we'll have to get into Begelton and Funchess and exactly this offense in 2020. So let's take the satellite view of what does this draft mean? Obviously, we know the first round pick will not play. Brian Gutekunst, at the very least, could admit that. The plan isn't for Jordan Love to see the field for at least a couple years. But he sort of pushed back and said that he thought Dylan and DeGuara were going to be part of the team, part of the offense in 2020. And then you added a whole bunch of interior linemen right after you extended Lucas Patrick and signed Billy Turner and drafted Elgton Jenkins. So Tom, what does this draft mean for the 2020 Green Bay Packers?
I think there will be a transition to Matt LaFleur's offense. I think this is where they did a hybrid of Mike McCarthy and Matt LaFleur's offense last year. They kept a lot of things in that Rodgers liked from McCarthy's offense and from what they had done in the past. And I think this is the vision that Matt LaFleur has. And let's look at two of these guys. A.J. Dillon, you know, LaFleur was the offensive coordinator in Tennessee when they had Derrick Henry. And he didn't use Derrick Henry and was really criticized for it until the second half of the year. And then Henry went off and has been really good since. This guy isn't the same back, but physically he's the same kind of back and having a big power back at the end of the year. Then you look at, you know, his mentor, Kyle Shanahan, has Kyle Juszczyk, the fullback, H-back, exactly what this guy they drafted DeGuara as. So he is putting in the parts of this classic offense, wide zone offense. I don't know how much wide zone they're going to run, but they are going to run the ball. There's no question about it. He looks to me like he's building up a 50-50 run situation. And then what that leads me to is, okay, I'm really curious, are they going to take out some of the options for Rodgers and some of the play calls? Maybe some of these play calls are going to be run left or run right. I'm really interested to see that when they come back and when we see them in training camp.
Yeah, it's interesting in that way, Tom, because look, A.J. Dillon, you know, there's only a couple knocks, I think, on Jonathan Taylor when he came out, and that was how many times he carried the ball. A.J. Dillon ran it 845 times.
Yeah,
in three years. That is a ton. And I know he said he's healthy. There were no medical rechecks he was asked to do. That's just a lot. And yet DeGuara is... I mean, he's an H-back. He's kind of the Delanie Walker, Luke Stocker type. I think Juszczyk is still more traditional fullback in that way, isn't he? So DeGuara is, you're right, fits that that mold. And it is an interesting move offensively, Tom, because, look, I've said this before on these podcasts where sometimes coaches or front offices need to take players away from coaches. You know, they keep rolling out veterans or they keep rolling out the guys they trust. And finally a personnel person needs to just get rid of that player, right? To make a change. I think this is the opposite. It's the front office giving the head coach more of what he wants to, quite frankly, change the offense away from what the longtime veteran quarterback has wanted. Let's be real about it. I mean, not only was the Jordan Love trade up and pick a signal of some kind, I think the rest of this was too, Tom.
Yeah.
To a degree. It's It is. No, these are the guys you're going to throw to. Maybe Funchess and Begelton will be way better than anyone right now can anticipate. But yeah, you're, I mean.
Well, also, I think he's saying you're going to have to make this offense work for you. You're going to have to do the play action part that we like. We're going to have to establish the run. And if you want it to work for you, you know, we have to stick with that. We have to be successful running the ball, and we have to run it 50% of the time. And I think that's kind of the message. You can win with those type of receivers is what he's saying. It's up to you to take advantage of this run game. And that's where I think, you know, they're gonna look to make their hay in running the ball.
So I do, you know, obviously we spent an entire podcast on the Jordan Love pick, and this is part of it, of course. But I do have a question here, Tom, in terms of what does this mean? You know, Matt LaFleur, this is the first time we've spoken to him since the combine, and he was not ready to just anoint Rick Wagner the starting right tackle. And I don't know, is that coach speak, or was the drafting of three guards any indication that they're also looking at pushing Billy Turner to right tackle? And secondly, is this just a foregone conclusion from when they either trade Lane Taylor, or now at this point, do they just have to release him? Because there's just so many interior linemen right now.
Yeah, you wonder about that. That was certainly a message by drafting a center. But I don't know how that will play out. We know that Corey Linsley is a free agent after this season. There's probably a pretty good chance that he goes somewhere else and makes a lot more money. The guards, you know, I think Wagner will be the starter. I think they need to keep looking for a veteran to plug in there. But it's just a matter of making sure that they're have enough depth. And they have a lot of depth at guard. And I don't see Billy Turner kicking out there, because I think he's just not a good enough pass blocker. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, for sure. It's it has been an interesting draft, and you obviously can't totally remake a roster in 1 year. You know, Matt LaFleur was hired in January. There was a draft in April. I think we're seeing that bigger stamp put on it. I do want to, you know, ask a little bit in the overview. You know, our Pete Doherty kind of went in on the defense, which did end the year as a top 10 scoring defense. Mike Pettine somewhat controversially remained. They haven't really added any free agents there aside from Christian Kirksey, who's got some health issues. And speaking of, their one linebacker they drafted, Kamal Martin out of Minnesota, played all of last year on a knee. And so Brian Gutekunst basically says, well, go back 2 years. That's the guy you're going to see. So I don't know if a fifth round pick can make an immediate impact at inside linebacker, Tom. Last we left our listeners, you were saying, wow, inside linebacker might be a panic situation for this team. Martin kind of projects as an off the ball. I talked to his defensive coordinator at Minnesota. He does think that the guy can run, feels he's better served in the box, that he's not really a coverage guy. So what, although he may be able to do that, what are your thoughts there just overall? What does this draft mean for the defense, which a bunch of resources were put in last year? It feels like Gutekunst must, A, feel super strong about his returning group, and must feel really, really strongly about the younger guys just taking more steps in development.
Well, it's funny because Kamal Martin sort of made it in his comments to us that he was a cover linebacker, that he could run down the field, that he was fast, that he was lengthy, that he could cover tight ends. He felt like that was a strength of his. So, I mean, he played a will linebacker position in Minnesota's defense. It would be a little bit of a transition for him to play in a 3-4. You know, he wouldn't be outside necessarily. But, you know, Blake Martinez was a fourth-round pick, number, I think, 131. And Martin is a fifth-round pick, 175. So, you know, they might think that he can start. Time will tell that. I just think that they've got to continue to build depth there. I don't think they're done fixing that position. You know, you can't go into the season with just Christian Kirksey, who's been hurt for past two seasons, as your main inside linebacker. I mean, Kamal Martin will be developed, and they'll continue to try to see if Oren Burks can build off his special teams play, and Ty Summers as well. But, you know, if I'm Mike Pettine, I'd be nervous going into the season with just the crew that I have. Overall on defense, they didn't really do much of anything. But, you know, 2019 was their defense building year. And this draft was based on building offense. And you know, I kind of understand that. Now they got to show that they can win with the guys they have on defense and have a better year than they did last year.
Yeah. So it's definitely an interesting draft with potentially long-term ramifications with wide receiver. You mentioned center, right tackle. I mean, there's not everything can be handled in one draft, but we will see. Especially once they get on the field. You know, Matt LaFleur didn't really give us any specifics on his plan for a virtual offseason, other than they will conduct one beginning next week. I think it was did Bill Belichick, Tom, is he the one who just said screw this, we'll come back together in camp? There was one team that essentially isn't even going to worry about this. So I mean, who knows? He had dogs drafting his kickers for him this draft. Unbelievable. So I do want to, we did get some questions. I'm not going to bombard you with too many since you had the live blog for 3 days, but I do want to circle back to Jordan Love. Now that we have this entire draft, we do have a free agency period. And while we will allow that Brian Gutekunst may rescind some of these undrafted offers if he can find a veteran to round out his 90 man, right now we kind of know where they're at. So the quarterback, Tom, Aaron Rodgers, Jordan Love is one message. The second and third round picks are other messages. I mean, Devin Funchess, Reggie Pegelton, I guess to a degree, are some kind of message. What is the quarterback thinking about here? What messages were sent? Because I can't help but think a few have been in some degree, with the head coach and the GM only saying, Aaron's a total pro, he'll be a great mentor, we're not worried about him. Is this a be careful what you wish for offseason for Rodgers? Obviously, the team gave him the massive extension. Mike McCarthy was fired. And this quarterback-friendly coach comes in. To me, Tom, I think Matt LaFleur was given more juice, if you will, because the offense, I mean, these are the guys. And is there any issue there, you know?
Jim, that is just a great point. I couldn't agree more, and that stuff we'll be addressing, and I'll be addressing in a column coming up, but this is totally a switchover. You know, he was the one who was tired of Mike McCarthy's offense, and while he didn't ever say it straight out, everybody saw it. You could see his frustration in it. You could see that he wanted some kind of change. Well, here it is. You know, now you're going to have to deal with it. You know, you were lucky enough to play in the same system for, 9 years, and all of a sudden you've got all these habits and things, and you get a new coach, it changes. You know, he's got a different offense, and you don't have the, wherewithal to say, you got to change to me. You know, that's not how it works, even if you're the greatest quarterback in the NFL. I think that they will play to his strengths, but they're going to play Matt LaFleur's offense. That's why they hired him, because he has this offense. And Rodgers supposedly loved this offense. Well, guess what? They run the ball in this offense. They run it 50% of the time, and they work it off of play action, and they don't usually have great wide receivers. I mean, maybe in Atlanta they did. But San Francisco doesn't have great wide receivers. The Rams don't have great wide receivers. This is the life he's got left with the Green Bay Packers. And Matt LaFleur is saying, you know, this is the offense. We've got to make this offense work, and you got to be a part of it.
The best way for Aaron Rodgers to finish out his contract in Green Bay is to win an MVP and a Super Bowl, or go to Super Bowls, much like Tom Brady did in New England, right? And then you force the hand and say, okay, well, Jordan Love needs to be traded.
Yeah, that's exactly what Brady did. They draft Jimmy Garoppolo in the second round, and, you know, maybe he's insulted, but what does he do? He goes out and wins some more Super Bowls, and Garoppolo gets traded to San Francisco. So if Rodgers wants to have Jordan Love traded to somewhere else, then he's got to play like that and win Super Bowls. It's inevitable that they're going to change quarterbacks. I mean, it's just a fact of life. And here's a chance for them to do it the same way they did it with Rodgers and let this guy learn and come through. The one thing I will say is there's going to be a lot of pressure on Rodgers, because if he starts playing poorly, man, you know how the crowds will be. But this is what he's built for. He loves competition, and he loves having that extra chip on his shoulder. So now he's got to go out and play it, and he'd be smart to play it.
And we have plenty of time to talk about the reshaping of this offense and what it can mean going forward. Be sure to head over to our social media channels. I'll make sure to tweet out this sort of opus I had written on what this offense is and how Rodgers could fit. We saw a little bit of it. I think now in 2020, we may see more of it. A couple questions from our listeners, readers, viewers, Tom. So, Crit Laquia asks about, it was specifically if David Bakhtiari might leave in free agency, but I don't really see that happening. I think it's more of, can Elgton Jenkins play tackle? So I guess we can loop this into the Kenny Clark discussion too, because that still hasn't been done. So can Elgton Jenkins play tackle, essentially, is the question, and would it be right side or left side if for some reason they feel the left tackle cannot be extended?
Well, they're going to re-sign David Bakhtiari. There's no question, unless they know something we don't know about his physical condition. You know, he's been banged up some, but they will re-sign him, and they will re-sign him for a lot of money. So I don't think that's a question. I think that's the same with Kenny Clark. They will re-sign him and spend a fortune to do it. You got to keep your best players. As far as the offensive line with Elgton Jenkins, I mean, he came out, a lot of people thought he was a center and thought he could be a dominant center. And so they moved him to guard, and it worked out pretty good. I don't know if moving him out to right tackle, I suppose he could play anywhere. He's a pretty good offensive lineman. But I don't know if you want to take his strength, which is being an interior lineman, and mess around with it. I think you're probably better off with him inside. And then if you happen to lose Corey Linsley next year, you know, he can slide to center, or you have the center that you just drafted. He could play in there. I'm never a big fan of taking a guy's, out of their positions.
It feels like they have a multitude of options on the interior. It does feel like Corey Linsley, this is probably his last year in Green Bay when you kind of put all this together.
Yeah, I mean, they took Jake Hansen, the center, for a reason. So, I mean, that is there's a chance that is going to happen. But we'll see, because you never know, what deal might be as the season goes on.
So Rob L., who I love his, he changed his kind of screen name to I've Been Hacked. I can appreciate that. he has the question everyone wants to know, Tom, is the thought process of apparently drafting exclusively for depth when it feels like there were pressing needs for rookies to play right away in 2020.
Well, I think you're always drafting for depth unless you're a really bad team. And anybody who came in this class was going to be a backup. Even if they drafted a wide receiver, a first-round wide receiver, that guy was going to be a backup. He's not going to – it was going to take him time to develop. He's going to be behind Devontae Adams, and he'd probably be behind Alan Lazard. And it would take some time for him to get into the rotation. Maybe if they had taken Patrick Queen or Kenneth Murray, that's a need, an inside linebacker position. Then, yes, that guy comes in and is a starter. But if you go through their lineup, think about it. I mean, where are their starting positions open? There really aren't that many starting positions open. Inside linebacker, maybe a defensive line position, but, they've got depth there. Cornerback, no. Maybe the nickel position, but they got Shannon Sullivan, who's been pretty good, and Will Redmond is there, and Josh Jackson is a possibility. And they drafted Kadar Holman. So I don't know. I just think that they're not drafting for necessarily starters right away.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the thing. It's, on one hand, fans were, one game away from the Super Bowl, need some help, but that's also part of it. If you're one game away from the Super Bowl, yes, there will be defections, but generally speaking, it means you had a pretty good roster to begin with. Ned Green, he asked about like a starting 11 and depth on the O-line. I think we've kind of handled that. Arlie Ron, who apparently has a gray dog, I don't know, he has an interesting question. We've asked Brian Gutekunst about this, and Goody continues to kind of just push it off, I think, Tom. But Arlie wants to know, how much do you think not having a mini camp, potentially a shorter training camp, maybe affected the thinking with not taking any receiver? And, he's just sort of curious about Lazard, St. Brown, Jake Kumerow. I mean, these guys really didn't produce at all in 2019. And what can they really do in 20?
I asked Gutekunst about that, whether the offseason had anything to do with taking a quarterback. Someone, was it in their thinking that there possibly might not be a season and this would be a good redshirt year, or that whatever rookie he took might not be able to contribute much this year, and so why not take a guy for the future? He blew that off. But I have to think that was in the back of their minds, that there's no off season. And, part of that is going to give guys like Lazard, like Kumerow, Reggie Begelton, the CFL guy, he hasn't been in the offense, but he's a three-year veteran. He knows how to play the game. I think those guys will not be bothered by the layoff. I think anybody who's a veteran will come in, and I think that's an advantage, that they're not bringing in two rookies who are going to have to start. I think this way they can ease these guys in. I don't know what the ceiling is for Lazard and Kumerow. I think the ceiling is much higher for Valdez-Scantling, But he's got to turn it, you know, the sophomore slump. He has to turn that around. And Equanimeous St. Brown, I thought, was coming on at the time he got hurt. But all of that is, you know, it has to work itself out during training camp. And right now, you know, they're just going to be idle, and all of it will be speculation.
Yeah, I think it's the speed issue there, Tom, because really it's Adams and Valdez-Scantling, at least in this current group, that have true runaway ability. I mean, the other guys are kind of big-bodied guys. I mean, we'll see what Reggie Begelton is, but even Devin Funchess, he's the big guy who can't really run.
Yeah, I forgot about Funchess. You know, you're right. Another big receiver who, you know, has ability to get down the field, sort of like Adams does. But they'll be counting on him quite a bit. And you know, Begelton will be in the mix too. And the one thing they'll be missing is speed. They just don't have anybody who's like a speed burner. So they're going to have guys who can block in Matt LaFleur's system.
So, you know, a lot of people, Tom, are just really curious. Louis, I'm sorry, I'm an Ozarski, but I can't even pronounce this last name. So Louis is, like many, wondering if this messed up offseason really has this had the team looking ahead to a, you know, 2021, like all these guys maybe, you know, drafting sort of ahead of a curve of some kind, maybe if college is messed up. I'll take it there, Louis. I mean, it's out there. You know, you got the NCAA talking about a potentially a spring season, and who knows what that'll do, you know, with some of these guys. I mean, did Goody says no. He says he's not thinking that far down the line. Is there any thought to that, or is this really just about, you know, they went about picking guys for 20 and he'll address 21 when he gets there?
Like I said, you know, he didn't really indicate that was the case. I think he probably told his scouts, let's keep it in the back of your mind. You know, there are guys, we may not have a season. Maybe, you know, either we need guys who are really high IQ guys or guys who we can develop. And I don't think it really played a factor. I think they pretty much just drafted, and they drafted for LaFleur's offense, and I think that was the biggest story.
Well, Tom, it has been a heck of a 3 days. We have potentially seen the clock start for the end of an era, the beginning of another one. We've seen more shifting of a Packers offense, which began to change in 2019. Perhaps we will see more change here in 2020 whenever we do get an idea of football this season. So the virtual offseason for the Green Bay Packers begins on Monday the 27th. Obviously, we at this point do not know when we'll see players, coaches, or any sort of on-field action. So just, you know, monitor our social media feeds over at Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, all those good things. We will keep you updated when we know and let you know also when we'll have another Green 19 podcast. So that will be coming. We won't leave you. Things are happening. We appreciate you subscribing and downloading to the jsonline.com, the packersnews.com sites and apps, and participating with Tom over these last few days over at the live blog as well. So, for Tom, I am Jim. See you next time.